Hey everybody, really excited about a new podcast I'm doing. So before you check out this one, and thank you for being a subscriber here, please check out my new show, Props and Drops, with the co-founder of DraftKings, Matt Kalish. We'll be talking a ton about alternative investing and quite a bit about sports, betting, and in the alt investing world, sports cards, sneakers, clearly NFTs, and then, you know, just overall investing advice. Just really excited about it. Gonna be a little more fun, a little bit more culture, day-to-day humor. I think you're gonna really like the first episode if you haven't checked it out. The link to the new show Props and Drops is in the description of this podcast. Please check it out. Would mean the world to me if you gave it a spin and hit me up on Twitter and told me what you thought.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Gary V audio experience. Today's episode is an amazing episode of Marketing for the Now. We want to encourage you to watch the full episode, even though Gary does show up at the 30 minute and 50 second mark. There's so much value in it, and we think you'll enjoy it.
This is the Gary V audio experience.
Hey everybody, I'm Andrea Sullivan, CMO of VaynerX, and welcome to VaynerX Presents Marketing for the Now. We're officially kicking off our summer series, so we've got a new format. We're cutting it back to 1 hour. There's still 10-minute conversations with CEOs, founders, and CMOs across a ton of different industries. Some of our interviews are going to be led by Gary, as well as some are going to be led by VaynerX leaders. Today, we actually have a bonus guest, which is AJ's brother. So if you can, stick around from 1:30 to 1:40 to close out the show. Today's question is, what are your predictions for the rest of 2021? Hashtag marketing for the now, and let's get started. First up, we have the amazing Jerry DeVard, who is a serial CMO and the founder of Black Executive CMO Alliance, which she will tell us all about. Jerry will be interviewed by Patrick Bennett, creative director at VaynerMedia. Welcome, Jerry and Patrick.
Thank you, Andrea. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Jerry. Thank you so much. We're kicking it off. We're number one.
I know. That's pressure, right?
I think we can handle it. I think we can handle it. So, I mean, that was a very brief look at your CV, but I mean, besides founding the Black Executive CMO Alliance, I mean, you've also been a CMO at like Office Depot, ADT, Citibank. You've had leadership positions at Revlon, NFL, General Mills, all these places. You've been named like one of the 75 most powerful blacks in corporate America, which is just, what a title, you know? But we met actually nearly 20 years ago when I was just a young creative working on the Verizon account.
But a very smart young creative and still a young creative, right?
I mean, I'm getting up there. You know, you got to shave to keep the grays away.
All of that is always very interesting, and some people live on that. That just happens to be what I've done. It's not kind of who I am. I think I've learned a lot at a lot of companies. Like most marketers, we've worked in a lot of organizations, and so we can kind of figure out, you know, solutions from a 180 degree angle. There's not one way to solve anything, and that's what I've learned in all the industries and sectors and countries that I've lived in to work in this amazing profession that I love.
I love it. I love it. So, you know, getting right into it, why now? You've been in this industry for, you know, a number of
long years.
You've done some incredible stuff. Why is now the time for Becca?
Now it's the time. It comes down to if not now, when? And if not me, who? It came out of a desire of wanting to make sure that people understood the breadth and the depth of the black marketers that were out there today. Because I got really tired of seeing all these roundups of the best of and the leading and the most, and they're not being people that look like me. And sometimes people pose this as a supply problem, but it's really a demand problem. And wanting to open up the scope of what you saw as a successful marketer and what young marketing professionals were looking at to see, does anybody look like me, to let them know that they could be that and that they had what they needed in order to be successful. And I wanted to corral a group of amazing CMOs because I knew that their mission was to pay it forward, was to give back. And I wanted to do it at scale because everyone was doing it individually. I'm mentoring two or three people. I'm talking to 5 or 10 people. But how do you do that at scale so that we can have impact? And I see your cute son.
Oh, look at that. We have a guest.
Hi, cute.
Hey, buddy. I think your mom's over there. Keep going over there. Speaking of like seeing, thank you. Speaking of like seeing people, like I was lucky enough to be able to see you, right? In this, you know, leadership role at Verizon 20 years ago. And that, you know, we don't know, but that could have completely changed my trajectory. You know, it wasn't until years later I was working at Digitas as a group creative director did I ever see another creative director at my level that was Black. That was Mark Williams, who went on to work at Chase and a number of other great places. So, you know, when you think about just that simple act of existing, that's pretty powerful.
It, you know what, Patrick, you're so right. And we underplay that because what happens is that when we're in these jobs, we're putting kind of one foot in front of the other and trying to keep on top of everything we're doing or need to do. We don't think about who's looking at us, who's watching us, who you're inspiring until you get those notes. I'm sure you've gotten them. We all get them that says, you know, when I was a, I saw you and I realized that I could, you know, a lot of times you can't be what you can't see because you start to say, well, wait a minute, if no one looks like me, does that mean that I can't? Because it's not right. A level playing field. We know that we all don't start at the same, you know, starting line. Sometimes we start back there and you have to catch up. And when you catch up, you have to, a lot of times people feel that they have to be flawless, that their execution has to be perfect. And the thing that I've done is shared all the stupid mistakes that I've made, the landmines that I stepped on, so that A, you know, yes, you have to be damn good at what you do. You have to show up and have solutions, but you can overcome adversity. You can come back from having tripped. It's not falling down. It's the getting back up.
I love it. So, you know, you talk a lot about
eight people. Sorry, you have 28 members of the Black Executive CMO Alliance that can also share those experiences. So, you know, that's not a one off.
Right. Exactly. You know, I love how you talk about meaningful corporate diversity and what that means in an organization. I mean, the talk of today is the next 6 months, right? You know, it, number one, I think we can both agree that this should really be a top priority for, you know, any marketing organization anywhere. Am I right? I think we can agree on that.
It should absolutely be a top priority.
And so,
okay, go on. Let me let you finish.
Well, I was going to say, and so, you know, as we consider like making a difference and making a dent towards getting towards meaningful corporate diversity, like let's help people out. Like what are some tangible ways or tangible steps some organizations can take before 2022 to make a difference?
So it's not even 2022. It's how about making a difference today? And
yeah.
I'm glad I, you know, let you finish. I felt like Kanye. I'm gonna let you finish. It really is, not only should it be a priority, because there's a lot of rhetoric. After the murder of George Floyd, there were companies that came out with, you know, grand protestations around what they were going to do. At last count, there was $60 billion that was pledged toward DEI initiatives as a result of companies recognizing that they needed to do more. All right, so that's rhetoric. Those are hashtags. Those are, you know, proclamations. But what have you done? And I think that more and more employees are starting to hold organizations accountable for their words. And so you've pledged that, but where are you on the commitments that you made? And more importantly than what you said and where you are is what are the consequences? Much like any executive or any marketer does not have the opportunity to stick around, you know, quarter after quarter, year after year, if they don't meet their numbers, if they don't meet their objectives, then if you've stated that you want to have significant improvement in representation, in support, in development, in retention, then how are you doing and what are you doing in order to make your objectives? Some of this is evolutionary, but most of it is revolutionary in that you have to be very intent about creating change and understanding where the barriers are and not allowing them to continue. So what we have to do is ask the question, what did we say? Where are we? And more importantly, what am I doing about it? You know, too many times we say somebody ought to. It's like, well, what am I doing? What does my direct report team look like? Do I have any people of color? Do I have any blacks reporting to me? Am I mentoring any people of color, students of color, leaders of color? Am I asking my organization to be accountable for where we spend our money and how we spend it? It's those kinds of questions that you have to ask the organization, but more importantly, you have to ask yourself and decide that you're going to be the change that needs to, you know, lead for others.
And I love it. You know, at the beginning there, you touched on something that I think is like incredibly powerful. I think a lot of organizations have been dinged by padding their diversity numbers by bringing in the most junior people while the, you know, the top echelons remain, you know, as they were. But you are just putting the power in the hands of everybody, you know, whether you're on the C-suite, whether you're, you know, somewhere in the middle, or whether you're entry level, if this is important to you, you can hold your organization accountable.
If there's one thing I would say that people can do is to ask the question, where, what did we say and where are we on what we said we were going to do? And is that enough? What more can I do by showing up, by advocating, by being an ally, by supporting, by calling it out? You know, so many times we see things that need to change, but we are in fear. And I'm finding that more and more people are willing and interested in having the conversation about what they can do. So you can start by saying, what have we done? What do we need to do? And here's what I think we can do. So everyone has a piece in this solving it, because it's not easy, but it has to start with caring and it has to start with your personal commitment. And also, you know, just really being very honest. Diversity audits are really important. Where are you on the numbers? Nothing stops a conversation like data.
I love it. You know, I could really talk to you all day. I wish this was like an hour where we could hang out. But, you know, I got to tell everybody, watch the Black Executive CMO Alliance. Watch Becca. You know, whether you want to know how to impact your organization, whether you want to take part in some of your education opportunities or some of your uplift opportunities or some of the find out ways to pay it forward. That is the place to be. Jerry, thank you so much for joining us on Marketing for the Now and for joining us with such an important message.
Thank you, Patrick. They can check us out at blackexec.com.
I love it.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Andrew.
Fantastic you, what you're building. Thank you. Next up, we welcome Cami and Zubeen. Cami Dunaway is the CMO of Duolingo, the world's most popular language learning app. Cami is also an author. She has an Amazon bestseller, Fit Matters, How to Love Your Job. Outside of work, you'll find Cami in her vintage 1967 Kenskill camper trailer. Cami will be interviewed today by our very own Zubeen Malavi, president of Vayner Commerce. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Andrea. Thanks for joining us, Cami.
Great. Thanks, Zubeen. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. I also want to thank Jerry and Patrick. That was riveting. I, like Patrick, wish that went on for an hour as well. I hope that we can make that happen. Cami, thank you again for joining us. Why don't we start with giving us a background about your illustrious career and why you joined Duolingo?
Sure. So I have been fortunate to work for some great brands. I led Doritos and Cheetos. I was at Yahoo for a while when it was really a fun, great place to be. I was at Nintendo as head of sales and marketing. So one of the common themes for me has been I like to help accelerate growth with brands that already are in a point of strength and that have a product market fit that really resonates with consumers. And that's certainly the case at Duolingo. They grew to be the most popular language learning app in the world with actually no marketing, just completely organically. And I think it's because we've created a really special product that is perfect for digital generation. It's gamified to keep you motivated. It uses AI to make the experience very personal. And it's also very mission oriented as a company. We really believe in free access to language learning as a way to just help people advance. And so, you know, it's a kind of a dream gig to build a marketing group on top of that foundation.
That's amazing. I think I first heard of Duolingo, I think it was like in 2011, when they got a lot of notoriety for taking and kind of creating meaningful use out of CAPTCHA. Mm-hmm. And for those of you that don't know, essentially the CAPTCHA thing that pops up nowadays that goes, what's the crosswalk, or pick all the crosswalks or the motorcycles or whatnot. Back in the day, it used to be like five characters, or it used to be a string of sentences or words. And Duolingo essentially took that. And what they did is they allowed people to translate content and start to build this machine learning environment. And it was so compelling at the time of like taking something that we're using every day and adding meaningful use to it. Now we'll get to that in a bit. I think we've got a interesting topic around that. But speaking of growth, speaking of impact, speaking of changes, so clearly with the pandemic going on, people in the workforce across the country and the world, there were commonalities they faced, challenges that they faced. What are some of those challenges that you face at Duolingo that were perhaps unique to Duolingo? What went well for you over the last 18 months, and what can others that are paying that tuning in right now can learn from?
Yeah, so COVID really was a time of explosive growth for us. In that period when the World Health Organization proclaimed a global pandemic, we grew 67%. There were like 30 million new users who came to Duolingo to learn a language. And that surpassed any growth we had seen in the past, even in big periods like New Year's. And, you know, I think about my own experience during the pandemic. We all wanted something that we could just feel good about, right? Something that we felt like we had some control over, and that just felt like we were doing something positive in our life. And excuse the phone. I guess that happens. And so, you know, taking 5-10 minutes a day to learn a new language is a way of expanding your world and being able to learn about new cultures and build new relationships. It was just something that really gave people a bright spot in the pandemic. And so for my team, that meant that we really had to, you know, change a lot of our habits. We had to be really agile. We're a very global organization. And so we also had to acknowledge that maybe when there was a moment of optimism in the US, things were still really bleak in Brazil or in India. So really taking time to listen to the sentiment of consumers around the world and try and make sure that we were tapping in to where the consumer was at any particular moment. But it was an exciting time of growth. We love people learning a language, and there were a lot of people learning a language during COVID.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the inability for people to travel, a lot of things like Duolingo ended up giving them that kind of experience, if you will, that they couldn't have in the physical world, of being able to, I can't travel to France, so why don't I learn French? Or I can't travel to Spain, let's learn Spanish. And I think it's what's interesting as well is like there are different sectors clearly that did remarkably well during the last 18 months, and some that just did incredibly poorly. And the key is understanding how you take that, and now in your case, leverage that as a platform for growth moving forward.
Yeah, and you know, there were a lot of silver linings. For example, one of the things that we had to pivot on is we started a few years ago doing what we call DuoCon. So bringing our super fans together to just talk about all things like language, pop culture, technology. And we had planned this big event in Brooklyn in 2020 and had to pivot to online, which, you know, caused a lot of scrambling and a lot of sleepless nights. But the silver lining was that we ended up having over 115,000 people tuning in to this virtual DuoCon from 130 countries. And so the reach that we were able to accomplish by being virtual rather than physical just turned out to be a really great thing. And so, you know, as we move forward, we're going to be virtual again this year and probably always keep a virtual element because it enables us to involve people who can't get there physically.
Absolutely. And given the fact that you have a digital product, you have an online community, it allows them to kind of connect more meaningfully than without it. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I want to kind of switch topics for a moment and ensure that our audience is getting even further value from this. So when we think about marketing and product relationship, like 95% of brands out there, product influences marketing. So you've got these products, and then marketing has to do something in terms of getting those products in front of the right people. You're in the 5%, and you're in the 5% in that marketing has in your organization actually influenced product, which intuitively speaking is how it should be done, because marketing is the closest to the consumer. They're listening to the consumer, and they should be able to influence product roadmap. But what I found remarkable is that your journey got you from understanding how human and people's bathroom behaviors impact their ability to learn a second language. So I'd love for you to leave us that final question and tell us how bathroom behaviors impact their ability to learn a second language.
Sure. So one of the things we hear from consumers is, I want to learn a language, but I don't have enough time to learn a language. But we were doing some research and realized that we all spend an average of 14 minutes a day on the toilet. And so we thought, how do we make people like get more productive use out of that time? Let's help them learn a language while they're on the toilet. So we actually created Duolingo Roll, which is toilet paper that comes in 5 different languages and just enables you to, you know, learn some quirky phrases in that downtime. So it was a ton of fun. We became a trending topic on Twitter. We have had thousands of requests for toilet paper. Put it in WeWorks in China. So yeah, it's fun to show up in unexpected places, just like Duo our owl.
Absolutely. No, and I think that it's just one further example of how marketing can influence product in a meaningful way. And it's not just gimmicky, if you will. There's actual value that somebody gets, and it's core to your brand. It's core to learning a language in your downtime. So I thought it was remarkable, and I'm glad you shared that story with us.
Thanks. It was a lot of fun for the team.
That's awesome. Cami, thank you so much for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure.
Great to meet you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Cami and Zubin. I love that last one. That was great. Next, we welcome Stephen and Claude. Stephen Sekoler is CEO and founder of Journey, a company committed to helping all people live happier, healthier, and less stressed lives. Couldn't we use a little bit of that? And talking with Stephen today is our beloved Claude Silver, VaynerX's chief heart officer. She fosters a culture of belonging and is indeed our heartbeat. Welcome, Stephen and Claude.
Hello. I can't hear you, Claude. Can other people hear you?
Hello, hello.
There we go.
Thanks for joining us from Hawaii today.
It's my pleasure. How are you?
I'm great. And I just want to thank Cami and Zubin. That was a great segment. And Patrick and Jerry, I now know all about bathroom insights, and I'll be thinking about that for sure as we go on. So we're here to talk about Journey. And to kick us off, can we hear a little bit about your journey? How did you get here?
Sure. So I started Journey in 2015, March of 2015, after 12 years of running a B2B business. So I basically helped organizations celebrate and inspire their employees. And so I knew how important it was for people to feel seen and recognized. And it was a few years before that, in 2011, that I went to Sydney, Australia, to open an office for that company. And I found meditation and other mental health practices, originally through Buddhism, actually. And it was really transformational for me. Fast forward a few years later, moved back to New York, sold the company, and thought there was a real opportunity to help people by bringing them a lot of these ancient practices in a really simple, approachable, secular way. And obviously, if the last 6 years, or especially the last 18 months, have taught us anything, it's that having a good, solid mental health practice can be really essential in today's crazy world. And so started the company with the help of real experts on the mental health side, on the workplace wellness side, and we help organizations keep their people healthy, happy, engaged, and, you know, centered.
I love it. I mean, we're all craving human connection more so than ever, as you just mentioned, in the last 18 months. And, you know, you and I have known each other now for a bit and never met in person. And so this connection is real, and I can't wait until we actually can meet in person. Can you walk us through a couple of the things that Journey actually offers, like some of the tangibles in terms of mental health, meditation? How does a person kind of work with the app, the program?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we set out to do was build the leading preventative mental health product. So basically the product that people will use on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis to keep themselves mentally and emotionally fit and balanced. And so that includes a whole host of tools, resources, and probably most importantly, support to navigate both work and life. I think we all know that what happens at work shows up at home, what happens at home shows up at work. And that's even before the two were, you know, so commingled the way they are now. And so we teach a variety of practices in a really simple, approachable way. So things like breath work, meditation, cognitive behavioral therapy, positive psychology, neuroscience. And because our clients range from very traditional investment banks and law firms to startups and nonprofits and charter schools, we need to be able to meet people where they are. So make it really approachable and delivered in a way that people can say, yes, that's for me. So we have digital products. We do formerly on-site things that are now done virtually through Teams and Zoom and things like that. But everything we do is rooted in human connection. So it's about live group learning. So we believe that people learn best in a group when they have a teacher and others that they can interact with and learn from. The second sort of core pillar is peer support, the idea that having the support of peers, colleagues, friends makes a big difference in terms of being seen and normalizing experiences and having people deeply engage. And then the third is proactive health. How do we encourage, inspire, nudge people to do something on a day-to-day basis to keep themselves mentally and emotionally fit, the same way we brush our teeth twice a day or take a certain number of steps, you know, to move our bodies? What's the mental health equivalent of that?
You know, the word preventative is something you don't hear a lot unless you are, you know, working on preventing cavities or preventing, you know, your arteries from being clogged. So I think the idea of this is a preventative way of going about your mental health, mental fitness is phenomenal. It's just so, it's clutch, I think, today. You know, the topic of today is where are we going in the back half of 2021? And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts you want to share around human connection, wellness, the world of mental fitness, mental health.
Sure. Yeah, I have a few thoughts. So first, I think, you know, we have done really well with these vaccines in getting them developed super quick and pushing them out. And so countries and in particular regions that have high vaccination rates will continue to grow. And that's exciting. And what we're starting to see is people spend more money on experiences versus things. I read a stat the other day that it was the first time, I think this last month was the first time where restaurant sales surpassed at-home eating for the first time since the beginning of the pandemic, right? And so it's very core to who we are as human beings to crave connection and human experience. So we're going to see things like travel come roaring back, which we're already starting to see. And, you know, the safety precautions are still in place in different parts of the country, but it's becoming safer and safer to travel. I think on the flip side of things, unfortunately, underserved communities will continue to struggle for a wide variety of reasons. So that's something that I think we as a society need to address. But when it comes to sort of I hate to call anything my area of expertise, that might be overstating it, but sort of the world that I live in, you know, people are still working at home and lives between work and home are kind of blended in a way that doesn't create the boundaries for healthy living, right? And so we're seeing companies and individuals struggle with burnout, people saying, you know, I need a break. And so hopefully, because it's the summer here in the States, because people are feeling a little bit safer, people will start seeing friends again, visiting family members, and having that real deep, authentic connection that's just core to who we are. So my hope is that as the economy grows over the back half of this year, we'll start seeing people start to feel healthier again, because of that one component of their life is now starting to get fulfilled. You know, that bucket's starting to fill up again because so many of us were alone for such an extended period of time.
Yeah, I mean, we're wired to belong. We're absolutely wired to be in community and connection with each other. And I love the fact that Journey has that component of support, because we're not supposed to be on this island in you know, lonelinessville. And it's been a really rough ride for many, many, many people, I think. We know that. We know the stats. So in terms of, you know, getting in touch with Journey, does someone just like log on and see if they can, you know, bring this into their company? I mean, this for me, it sounds like a slam dunk.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. We've been fortunate in that there's a lot of, whether it's senior leaders at the C-suite or HR folks who see this and say, hey, my company could use more of this. So people can reach out to me directly. People can find us online and, you know, on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on Facebook, on, you know, all the places. But really, we always work to try to make it very relevant for that particular audience. Because like I mentioned, like we work with Harlem Children's Zone is a partner of ours for many years, right? They're very different than some of the law firms like Davis Polk or Wachtell or some of the other folks we work with, right? And so how do you make it very personal for people in a way where they say, yes, this is for me. It doesn't feel like it's some woo-woo thing or it's something built for someone else or, oh, I don't need this. You know, because at the end of the day, the truth is we all really do need that connection.
And in our final moments, can you leave us with just one bit of a mindfulness tip, something that we can do today to just take a minute?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's not much more difficult than just closing our eyes and just taking like one big deep breath in and out. And just having that pause can really reset, recenter, allow us to kind of ground and connect. And of course, if we have more time to take three breaths or five breaths, but you know, we often go from meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting, especially with Zoom, right? With no break in between to even go to the bathroom. Even just saying, you know what, I'm just going to close my eyes and just take that one breath can be really recentering. So very small tip, but my tip for today.
Thank you so much for being here. And thank you for the tip.
It's great seeing you, Claude.
Thank you for that breath of fresh air, Stephen and Claude. Next, we welcome Gary and Dylan Lissette, CEO of Utz Brands. Dylan joined Utz in 1995 and represents the fourth generation of a family-owned business. And he took this 100-year-old brand public last year. We're so excited to have you, Dylan.
Hello. Hey, Gary, how are you doing?
I'm well, Dylan. Nice shirt, brother.
How do you like my backdrop?
I like it. I like it. I like what I'm seeing. I like it a whole lot.
I didn't know how blue and orange would clash, but...
I think you look great, brother.
It's exciting.
So, Dylan, I think let's get right into it because these go very, very fast. I can see everyone in the chat, a lot of Utz OG fans, love your product. But for what we're here for, what are your predictions for the rest of 2021? What are you seeing? What are you feeling? What's emerging? What's declining? And maybe before that, 30, 45 seconds on Utz, just to give context for the few people that won't know.
Yeah, for those who don't know about Utz, a 100-year-old business, full line, based in Pennsylvania, but have grown regionally into a national company over the last 100 years. We have $1.336 billion of retail sales per IRI, and that's up a ton over last year because of COVID and because of a lot of things that we'll talk about, I'm sure, today, Gary. And excited to be here with you and excited to be working with your crew as well.
Thank you. So to that point, Dylan, what is, and obviously for everyone's knowledge, Dylan and Utz are working with VaynerX and the Sasha Group. Anything from a marketing standpoint or a consumer consumption standpoint, where people are buying the product, what is the biggest kind of, like if I said, you know, kind of that fun business talk that you can have over a cocktail, hey, what are you really predicting we're going to see here in the next 6 months? Anything stand out?
I mean, what I would definitely say is that people are coming out. People are traveling, small format. You know, last year it was all the small format was closed down, right? You know, think about New York City.
Educate everybody on small format.
Yeah, small format would be like up and down the street business, the bodegas. Just think about New York City. Think about August or July of last year. It was dead, right? People were not going to their office. They were not picking up a sandwich. They were not picking up a bag of chips. They were home or they had fled the city to some other place and they were staying put inside their house. So I think the number one biggest change that is going to occur and is occurring as we speak today is the fact that people are coming out, that small format, the return to the office. Maybe it's hybridized. Maybe it's you know, 2-3 days a week, but that return to the office will stimulate the small format. We've seen last year where we had literally like a stretch of 10, 12 weeks where that channel of business really shut down. It's exploding this year. So I think as people get out, as they travel, as they enjoy the weather, as they get outside, as they start traveling back to work, as they start vacationing again, that whole small format is really lifting, and it's lifting brands like, you know, Dirty Potato Chips and Zapp's Potato Chips. That's why I'm wearing the Zapp shirt today, but it's lifting those brands up very nicely this year. So that's a big change for this year.
What about on the marketing front? You know, as an executive navigating all these years, you know, obviously our relationship speaks to a contemporary point of view, either shift or affirmation. What's been the most interesting thing that you've seen from a marketing standpoint, since this is marketing for now, whether it's how people interact with social or television or outdoor, or does anything stand out?
Yeah, I mean, the number one thing I think that we've seen, and especially we used to do a lot more sponsorship. You know, we used to, if we had $10 billion to spend on marketing, we used to spend a lot more on sponsorships. And we're really moving away from that. We're moving directly to digital social, as most people are aware. But what we really love about that is the fact that it's connecting with people. And I think it was one of the last guests, Stephen at Journey, said, you know, meeting people where they are. And I think that's so important because it's absolutely right. I think our brand in general has grown through the, you know, 100 years of existence to what it is today by meeting people where they are. And I think that social and digital connection of really being able to connect directly to somebody in a very particular manner, that's not just throwing up a billboard, you know, that 100,000 people pass and, you know, 1,000 of them happen to, you know, catch it and think about it, but really being able to connect, but then create like that that 360 connection where we're connecting with them, they're connecting back to us, we're connecting, and it's going back and forth, and we're doing a lot of, you know, kind of cool stuff with that right now.
Do you feel that, you know, there's a real mix that watches this show. You have a lot of entrepreneurs, senior executives, and then you have a lot of Fortune 500 CMOs, CEOs. I've always felt that from Madison Avenue to Main Street, one of the things that were really surprising is the disconnect. For entrepreneurs that are watching, they'd be surprised how much big companies or bigger brands than their small business really valued what the industry calls reach, right? Like, hey, if we run commercials, if we run those billboards, that will work. And I almost live in this bizarro world because for them, they blindly believe what's going on and here is how they see stuff. Why, for the fellow executives that are watching, what do you think makes it hard to go away from a big baseball sponsorship or running a bunch of television and getting a lot of GRPs or the way that, you know, how brands are built or how Procter & Gamble taught, like there's an institutional 50 years of how this is done that is getting disrupted because of the internet. And, you know, we're 20 years now into the internet and still the majority of big companies still want to go for potential reach versus what I think we're seeing together, which is really winning on relevance, which actually then makes people buy stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think you also have to make sure that what you're spending, if you're spending a dollar, you have to know that it's working. I mean, that's correct. One of the things I think is that when you do, I mean, we would liken this to say, well, if we were a large beverage company, we could go spend, you know, $3 million on a commercial and then, you know, hope that it works and put it out there and then roll the dice and it's a dud and it falls apart. I mean, you have no kind of ROI that you can say that dollar worked. And it worked here at a 4.2 return, or, you know, if we went over here, it was 5.9. Let's go somewhere between that four, you know, let's adjust our messaging. So I think that's the new world. I mean, it's talking about where you're, I just had the benefit of hosting 12 under 17 year olds for a week at my house last week. And we had two from Italy, two from Spain, two from Germany, one from Bermuda, one from Bahamas. These kids, these young consumers, the consumer of tomorrow, were on their phone the whole time. I don't know if the TV ever turned on. So if you're thinking about connecting to tomorrow's consumer, in a sense.
You know what's funny? That is often an anecdote people share. I don't think people realize how many 30, 40, 50, 60 year olds are on their phone during commercials. And now with OTT, how many commercials are even getting through?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So Dylan, we really like it.
Yeah, please. Final thoughts, 30 seconds, 60 seconds. What should executives, entrepreneurs, or leaders be thinking about for the rest of 2021? Anything else pop out?
I mean, honestly, very quickly, I thought about this a lot. It's man, people want to get out. People are excited to get out. They've got money in their pocket. They want to reconnect. We had a barbecue yesterday, saw somebody who hadn't come out of the house for a year. They are so excited to be out and about and to engage and to interact. That's how people should be thinking for the rest of this year. I think it's going to be very positive, very exciting time for everyone, for all brands.
Thanks for being on, my friend.
All right. See ya.
Love the optimism. That was awesome. Next, we welcome Che Huang. He's the CEO and co-founder of Boxed, a warehouse club delivery service. Che is a serial entrepreneur and started Boxed in 2013 in his parents' garage. Now, 8 years later, the company delivers anywhere in the United States and he's going public. And you should know he's a Star Wars fan and has a couple of stories around that, Gary.
He has a better story than that, Andrea. Watch this. Che, my man, great to see you. Please tell everybody where you went to high school.
I went to high school where Gary grew up as well, Edison, New Jersey, at a school named J.P. Stevens. And out of that school, there's a bunch of random entrepreneurs, man. Gary, you know a bunch of them, man.
Why don't you list off, do you know a couple of them to list off for everybody? Because everybody's, so everybody, before Che lists maybe one or two others, I moved in eighth grade. So my whole life, I thought I was going to J.P. Stevens. where I lived in a townhouse, I already knew my path because I could cut through the back. It was all very exciting. And then my parents moved me to Hunterdon County. So I never got my J.P. Stevens experience. But Che, to your point, I read that article, that there was an article written once about all those entrepreneurs and you being one of them. Wild stuff.
Yeah, so you got us here, right? You're honorary J.P. Stevens, Gary. I don't know if they gave you that yet, but
I want it.
We're gonna lobby for that. One of the co-founders and the former CEO of Blue Apron was out of J.P. as well. Three out of the four co-founders of Boxed, Nature Box was founded out of J.P. Stevens. There's more and more. You know, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is. And even once in a while, I just meet a random entrepreneur or someone at a conference just say, hey, you know, JP class of XYZ. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is too much.
I see a lot of people in the comments. It is a good idea. Move to Edison and send your kids there if you want them to be entrepreneurs. Che, why don't you give 1 minute on Boxed for the few people that don't know what it is?
Yeah, Boxed is an online wholesaler. So we not only are an e-commerce retailer, but we are also now an e-commerce enabler. On our e-commerce retail side, we service both B2C as well as B2B customers with snacks, pantry items, everything you need to run your household or your office when it comes to pantry snacks and coffee. On the enablement side, we now package up all that software and hardware that we built. So all the front-end systems, inventory management systems, warehouse management systems, even the physical robots that we engineer and build ourselves, we now enable other retailers in the enterprise to use that technology stack via a new SaaS business. So that's what we built basically in almost 8 years from a garage in Edison.
If I asked you let's go into it because we don't have a lot of time. Your personal predictions from your purview of the rest of 2021 on consumer behavior, on opportunities, on marketing strategies, on buying trends, since you're in that game, wherever you'd like to take it.
I, you know, and this might be kind of bold talk and maybe a little bit too much, but I fundamentally believe from what I've seen that we are going into the most prolific back to school, back to work period in not modern American history, but American history. I think we've never had this many folks not in the office. You've never had this many Americans not in school. And everyone is going back around Labor Day, maybe not 5 days a week, but certainly some days of the week. And that is going to create huge, probably opportunities as well as supply chain challenges as well. So I fundamentally believe that's coming up in 90 short days.
On that prediction for the rest of the year, do you feel as though people are gonna go into a mixed environment? Do you think that we have crossed the chasm of the 5 day a week commute? Is that your intuition? Or do you think it's like one of those things, you know, like is this going to be a moment that looks like, you know how when you're driving and a cop car's lights go on and you're scared shitless and you grab your boat, you know, if it's the first time you've driven with both hands and then the car goes by and you're like so relieved.
Yeah.
But for the first like 12 minutes, you drive 55 and then somehow you don't even realize it, but you're back to 73. Do you think that people are saying it, but we'll find ourselves in April of 2023 close to where we were? Or do you think the society's got comfortable with meetings on Zoom and other platforms and we're there?
I think the latter. So meaning that I certainly don't think when we go back to work this September, it's going to be 5 days a week. Everyone's flying halfway around the planet just for a 1 hour meet and greet. I don't think that's going to snap back to like the way that that we used to be back in 2019 and before. But certainly, I think a significant portion of it will come back. And this is not me just being in the pool and just say, hey, I promise you, it's not ice cold. Jump in as well. Even, you know, today in the office, we're seeing more and more people come back. And when people see each other and hang out, they're all going out for happy hour today. It's just a different atmosphere. Now, I don't think people are going to come back again 5 days a week just for that. But certainly a few days a week if you live in and around the office. I think the other stuff that you mentioned before about 2023, yeah, man, like, you know, it's no longer an affront if you have to dial into a meeting or Zoom. So if you're trying to pitch the biggest client that you potentially can have, and if you have to Zoom in, I think that's going to be acceptable these days after this pandemic. I think you probably wouldn't want to do that back in 18 or 19, but these days, I don't think anyone would be offended that you don't fly halfway around the world just to shake their hand.
Yeah, I think, let me, it's funny. This is an interesting thing. I probably think 25% of my travel in 2019 would never happen in 2022. If I had to throw a number for you, just think, because I think I've done a lot of Chicago, Miami, Boston for one meeting. There's just no way. There's no way. You have a number of a prediction? That for you, let's just yourself, if I said that, gut feeling.
So I'm an outlier in the sense that, dude, I flew 268,000 miles on United in 2019, dude. Yeah. That was like, it's brutal. Most of it in economy too. So I have the scars from that year, and I love United, you know. But it's just it's just long flights, you know. So because the first customer of ours on the SaaS side of the house was based in Japan. You know, I was doing, in 2019, I did 6 or 7 day trips to Tokyo. And so I don't think we're going to be doing day trips to Tokyo anymore. So at least my mileage will probably cut down by at least half. I'll do a lot of the domestic travel, but no more international meetings just for one handshake. I think that's behind us. So, but I do think 25% is a fair number. Potentially, if you're an airline CMO or exec out there, I think what I'm seeing, just anecdotally at least, is that some of the leisure travel, that revenge travel is definitely going to come back and maybe bolster some of that lack of business travel in the coming year and years.
I assume Boxed, you know, benefited in a lot of ways by consumer behavior during COVID. Anything fun to share with us that you can share, like funny things people were buying or maybe even more interestingly for predictions of 2021, anything that has emerged, any categories, any products, anything kind of like, I'm just being nerdy now and being selfish, just curious. I love this shit. I'm a retailer at heart, so I love this stuff.
Dude, I mean, you know, Gary, we've known each other for a few years now, and I always joke that I'm like a toilet paper salesperson, and like, there's always this running joke until 2020 when like, you know, it got real, man, and it became like the most popular profession on the face of the earth, and I had high school friends hit me up. It's like, yo, we haven't talked in 20 years, brother, but like, you got some of that toilet paper for me? And well, I'm like, oh my God.
Do you have any sense why toilet paper was so high? I'm still a little like, please tell me.
There's more flex in other things. Like most folks think toilet paper is just, you know, you have a table sized machine pumping out toilet paper. Modern toilet paper manufacturing plants and machines are basically 3 stories tall, and it takes about $300 million of CapEx to build one. You need to be by a fresh water source. This is full on Warcraft, man. You got to like be by the water or you know, in order to build one of these things. And so if Gary and Shay made our own toilet paper company, dude, and we put $300 million into that machine, we are going to crank that thing 28 hours a day, 12 days a week. So when there's a surge in demand, it's not like they're like, oh, just crank up excess capacity. There's no extra capacity. Those machines are running 97% capacity already. And to build another one is going to take years. And so there just wasn't that flex.
But why are human, like, I don't know, like, to me, like, I'm not so like to me, napkins and tissues and like jumping in the shower. I feel like people are too bougie. Like, I didn't know, like, I think we've just become soft, like leaves, like there's options out there, people.
Like, there are definitely options out there. And so funny anecdote is that I was so confident in my ability to procure a toilet paper, just given what we do, that we actually caught ourselves in our household without toilet paper. And I had to, I had to scramble and do the walk of shame to our fulfillment center and take a pack off the shelf. And I saw multiple people in the FC look at me, just like shaking their head. I'm like, yo, dude, times are tough, man. I underestimated how much we had at home. But yeah, there could have been other things, man. And it was a shocker for me and us.
Brother, continued success. I'm proud of you.
All right. Thanks, Gary.
Cheers.
Oh, that was too much.
You like that?
I love that one. We're too bougie for toilet paper.
You are.
I got it. I'm searching.
Go fully bougie and get a bidet. You know, like one or the other.
That's right. All right. Our next guest is the incredible Kara Golden. She is the CEO and founder of Hint. And Kara is a superwoman. She was named the EY Entrepreneur of the Year and was one of, I love this, InStyle's Badass 50 list.
Nice.
Check out her podcast, The Kara Golden Show, and get her book, Undaunted, Overcoming Doubts and Doubters. Welcome, Kara.
Hi. Great Kara, to see you.
Great to see you. How you been?
Good. How are you?
Good. Kara is you know, built an amazing company. Most of you who are watching right now are very aware of Hint. I got to meet Kara over a phone call very early in that journey and was so impressed with the way they got distribution for that product. I remember being on a beach or something and talking to you about getting into Starbucks and things of that nature. And just, it's been really a joy to watch you build this company.
Thank you. I remember that call as well. So
Kara, why don't you tell people really quickly, because I'm sure it'll be at least 5% that don't know the brand. Let's start there and then we'll go into what you're seeing in the streets for the rest of 2021.
So I have it here in case people are wondering what the heck it is. So it's an unsweetened flavored water that I started actually 16 years ago. For people who are thinking that there's overnight success stories, I mean, it takes time to build quality and great brands. And I'm really proud of what we've done. And started 16 years ago. In addition to building a great product, we've built a different way of actually going to market. Over 50% of our business is direct to consumer. So when you look at, you know, the beverage industry as a whole, there are certainly companies, the big soda companies, that are selling on Amazon and Box and others, sure. But having a direct business and having that direct relationship with the customer is something that we've built for the last 8 years. And it's a solid, incredible subscription business that many, many people are using.
What stood out for you before we go into what's happening in 2021? There's been a lot of contextual COVID conversations. Anything stand out from you? Did anything catch you off guard? Was anything a pleasant surprise from a consumer behavior standpoint?
As far as the pandemic?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the pandemic, right before the pandemic hit, I guess the end of 2020, we were really focused on automating a lot of our plants. And so most people in the beverage industry were like, why are you doing that? By the way, I didn't come from the beverage industry. I came from the tech industry. And my husband is our chief operating officer. And he also came from the tech industry. So we kept thinking about, well, what if somebody sneezes on the line, right? As we're filling a bottle, we don't have preservatives in the product. What happens? So we wanted to get the people out of the room. We've been working on this for 4 years to get the people out of the room. By the end of 2019, we had everybody out of the room and automated and got you know, those people away from where the actual fill was. By the time the pandemic hit, we learned that as an essential product in a pandemic, you have to be running your plants 24 hours a day. You have to you know, do your best practices to best efforts to actually supply the store shelves. So people were hoarding toilet paper, but they were also hoarding water, bottled water, and products like Hint. So being able to actually run our facility without any hiccups because we had planned it out was a tremendous advantage. In addition to that, we do everything here in the US. So we've always believed that get things as local as possible. We blow our own bottles on the lines where everything has been done in the US. So when the pandemic hit, we got a phone call from Costco and they said, hey, do you guys do everything local? Because we're having a lot of problems with suppliers that are supposed to be getting cans from China and they're not coming. So can we put you guys nationwide with Costco? So in addition to going nationwide at the beginning of 2020 with Walmart and Sam's Club and other huge retailers, we went nationwide in April with
Costco. So you got extra distribution because of the localization.
Yep. And also just because we were, you know, automated as well. And so one of my predictions really for, you know, remainder of 2021 and going forward is supply chain. It matters. Automation, localization, and, you know, pretend that there's another pandemic coming, because the more that you can rely on, or I should say, the more you can rely less on people being in the room, that is where you protect yourself and your company.
What about from a marketing or just what consumers are doing with products or consumption of media or marketing? What are you seeing? What are you kind of predicting over the rest of this year, maybe into 2022?
Yeah, so for years, I've been telling people, you know, drink water, not sugar, and get the sweeteners out of your life, and health is really important, and lots of people listen, but there were some people where it went in one ear and out the other, and they just did whatever they wanted. Today, I think if anything great came out of the pandemic, it's that people want to stay healthy. Nobody wants this virus. If they got the virus, they don't want it again, and they want to protect themselves in any way that they can. And so health and wellness as a category is accelerated, but it's here to stay, and it's just going to get bigger. And what I'm most excited about is watching companies that are going to be developed out of how do we help people stay healthier? Obviously, we've seen companies like Hint and Peloton and, you know, lots of other segments of that. But I think it's just going to increase. And I think consumers are listening now and they want it. And I think it's so important. And I think also the direct consumer with the direct relationship with the consumer. So I think e-commerce is here to stay. And I think we're going to see companies that have not really embraced it because they think, well, you know, there's still these relationships with stores. We've got them. We've got lots of space. But another pandemic comes, you start to, you know, shut down fast food restaurants, universities. You know, you start to see that, wow, what happens? What can I do to protect myself? Having that direct relationship with the consumer has become more and more important.
I mean, even pre-pandemic, just having the actual data, when you're a big brand and you're selling your product through Albertsons or Kroger's or BJ's or Costco or Walmart, you don't actually know who's buying it.
Totally. And that's the thing too. I mean, the other thing that we've seen, Gary, is that the consumer that is going online and buying Hint from us or from Amazon, they'll also walk through a Costco store, and they may not go there every week, but they may go there every month, and they see, you know, a variety pack that they can't buy from us online, and they're going to pick it up, right? And so our sales, our direct-to-consumer business tripled in the last 17 months. Our overall business grew by over 50%. So it's crazy what's going on. But I think it also speaks to another trend that I think is really, really important, which is that the consumer is really looking for authentic brands to guide them. And so, you know, I know you love talking about storytelling. I'm a huge believer in that as well. But it's also about how to lead consumers. So, for example, we started our company with Hint Water. And a few years ago, I had a scare with skin cancer. And I came out with a sunscreen. The number of brands or the number of soda brands that were saying, what is that tech executive doing? You know, she's coming out with the sunscreen brand. That was never my purpose. My purpose was to service the customer and help customers understand that here's a great product. We never even stuck it on the beaches anywhere to sample it. We just said, hey, you like Hint Water? Come and try this Hint sunscreen. We had like an 80% return on you know, just an email that went out to these consumers because they trust the brand.
The brand.
They believe in the, it, they
I'm a big fan of horizontal expansion for brands. I think a lot of brands have a lot of permission to go into other categories and haven't gone there. And that's a little bit of a prediction for the next decade. Kara, continued success. Great to see you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kara. So Gary, we've got one bonus guest today, and it's your brother.
I'm very excited. I've heard.
AJ is the co-founder of VaynerMedia and Vayner Sports. Now I'll let you guys take it away.
That was it? That's all you got for him? That you just,
that's all I got
it was
for
just, him. It was just such a powerful statement. You didn't need anything else.
Exactly.
Hey, bro. How are you? Yo, yo. Let's just get right into it. You know, I think a lot of people are probably excited about this. I see the comments exploding. What are your predictions? I mean, obviously you've been spending a ton of time with NFTs, but obviously you're spending a ton of time in the sports business. So with this broad question, what are your predictions for the rest of the year? What's on your mind?
I should have probably thought about this a little bit more. you know, I'll keep it close to home. NFTs, in general, obviously you and I have spent a ton of time on it this year. It's funny, you know, I think the media, there's a certain subset of the media that wants to play this narrative that NFTs are dead. I think that's the first thing from the case. I think you have a lot of brands that just a month ago decided that they're going to take it seriously. I think I saw something like Fox invested $100 million to stand up a division that's going to focus on their IP and NFTs. So I think NFTs will continue to expand. I think that everybody that's developing for NFTs from like a picks and shovels perspective knows that there's friction that needs to be reduced. Everybody knows that, you know, fiat purchasing ability is going to be a big deal. And, you know, even things that are like L2, like Matic, they're too hard for the everyday consumer. So I think we're going to see more on that front. So that's fun. I think another thing that's really relevant to my world, in addition to NFTs, given the sports agent route, is just name, image, and likeness. We're 2 weeks away. We still have
why don't you break down that for everybody who's watching what that means?
Yeah, so name, image, and likeness in regards to collegiate sports is the idea that for the first time, college athletes will have the ability to monetize their personal brands. You know, the NCAA has made that not okay. They've threatened, you know, eligibility for anybody that tried to make money. There was actually a kicker who's making good money on YouTube.
Oh, I remember. I forgot about that kid. Down in Florida?
Yeah, FAU or FIU, one of those smaller Florida-based schools. And he actually was just like, well, cool. Like, I don't think I'm going to make the NFL. And the NCAA says, I'm not allowed to make money, then I guess I'm not going to play football anymore. And so he kept making money and he's built the brand as an influencer and has done well. I think made the right decision. And I just think that's terrible that he had to make that decision. You have all these other industries, right? You have musicians. There's plenty of musicians that were attending school and making money on Spotify and YouTube and touring, and they weren't stopped. So that's exciting. We've got a few states that are going to go live. It's still a complicated issue. There's still things that can happen from a federal government and NCAA perspective over these next few weeks, but we're inching towards progress. And so that's going to be fun. I think it's going to create a lot of buzz. And I think it's something that's long overdue. So that's going to be a fun part of the second half of 2021 as well.
What do you glazed over? Well, you spoke on it. Where would you put NFT culture at the macro consumer level? Like, how early are we? Are we in the first inning, second inning, third inning?
I'll say we're in the second inning. I give NBA Top Shot a lot of credit for getting us from the first to the second. I always have a good group of friends that are not knee deep into technology, and they're always my litmus, right? Even back in the day, Gary, like when we did like things like Uber and Venmo, I would literally introduce Uber and Venmo to my friend group, right? And it was always really interesting for me to see the reactions, and I would look for, you know, their pros and their cons and latch on to certain things. And
I think about the Venmo meeting a lot. We were so fucking early.
And so were they. They didn't even have a product.
Remember we went to like my
apartment? A Starbucks
and then we went to my apartment.
Yep.
We nailed that investment, and they sold the company fairly early before it went bananas.
Yeah. No,
that was as early as it gets.
Yeah. I mean, when we invested in Venmo, it was SMS only at that point. So it was, you could text money to one another, and there was a slew of verifications. Yeah. And there was no.
It kind of reminds me of like the NFT stuff you were talking about right now, because we're so early. Like, it's, as a matter of fact, it was funny. I was going to hit you up off this show, but I'll just do it right now. Like, I'm going to do like a white glove concierge thing. I had like 4 emails on this flight from people like, hey, I have $100,000 I want to buy in BeFriends. I'm scared shitless. I have no idea. And I was like, fuck it. Nick Dio, Tyler, I'm gonna get the whole band together, send out a bunch of content next week and be like, if you're a baller.
We did it on the launch. I white gloved like 15 people into the experience. Dio did too. Like, that's what we did around the launch, and it's still a need. Like you said, it's not easy. It's not intuitive. It's scary. You read the headlines of stealing and scams and phishing. And the problem is that stuff exists. Like, the people that are in crypto are some of the smartest people in the world. And there are unfortunately some small subset of that population is taking advantage of people, right? And so it's so early. A good example is, you know, the most important thing in the world when it comes to your wallet is your seed phrase. And it's so early that I think actually seed phrase is kind of going under a rebrand right now, right? There was a great article about pivoting it to secret phrase so that people know that it's supposed to be a secret. You're not supposed to share your seed phrase, but what the hell is a seed phrase? Nobody knows what a seed phrase is. So it's that early that like the main components of crypto and NFTs, I still think are a work in progress. And I think it's a big deal. So I think NBA Top Shot helped us get from the first to the second inning. You know, they used a big IP like the NBA. You could buy via credit card. That was a big deal.
I'm good. We only have 4 minutes. I'm getting bombarded. Everybody wants to know what your favorite V friend is.
My favorite V friend is my favorite investment is the very, very, very lucky black cat. I own a core of a very rare and an epic of that. So I'm making a bet that maybe the cat can be a Pikachu type character. It's the only one in the logo. So from a pure investment perspective, that one, from a pure just for fun, because I like the product and everything. And I think you probably know this. I'm a big fan of the Stunned Sun. just because the Stunned Sun for me is like such an inside joke, right? Like, stunned is a word that you and I always use growing up amongst like our closest friends and stuff like that. It's just like a word, you know. I think like super is a big word for me and you. Stunned is a big word for you and I. So like that I like. And then the sun character itself is a real throwback to your old school doodles. Like, it's half sun, half like classic Gary doodle character. So that one just resonates for me. I don't think that's going to be a lot of people's favorites. That's just highly personal.
Now I'm just having fun. Were you completely blown away by how the Hawks came back yesterday? That was ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch the game, so I kind of caught it as a post game. What were they down? 26 in the third? It's insane.
Late third, like 3 minutes left on the road, game 5.
If we're talking basketball, I want to give a shout out to a guy that I think I've always been higher on than most everybody, and he catches a ton of shit, and I don't think he got nearly enough love for last night, is Paul George. I think Paul George is an incredible basketball player. He's had some bad playoff performances. But I mean, Kawhi goes down. That's a huge W and a huge game for Paul George in a game 5, in my opinion.
What about the Suns fan who beat the shit out of those two?
Love that guy.
You want to hear the best part?
Self-defense. So he wasn't
completely
like
self-defense.
Complete self-defense. And the fact that he had like the wherewithal to cap the beat down with the prediction of Suns in 4 and then it delivered, iconic. I'm all in on that guy.
As you know, like, we always get so pumped when like athletes or rappers or people we think are cool are following me on Instagram. So it was going on this flight. I was going through it and I found his Instagram account. Like somebody tagged him. He follows me. I'm so fired up.
You have to connect. What are we doing? Where are we?
I didn't do anything. I got to think of something. We got to come up with a. I might have to. Go ahead.
Portnoy had him on the pod already.
I think I might put him in a Super Bowl commercial.
I love it.
I might create a new V friend.
Just
that beats up people like
you gotta do
like
you gotta
fighting fan Falcon.
You gotta take a picture with him where you're doing the five
and he's doing the four. That's good.
That would kill. You just need to fly to New York for that picture alone. I feel like that's a big one.
Maybe we'll if it looks. I feel like the Suns are gonna be in the finals. Maybe you and I will fly out to a game and bring him. Take a
let's leave Nate behind.
No, we gotta take Nate. Nate's our guy. I'm happy for him. I'm sad for us. Are you ready for football?
Beyond ready for football.
I'm so excited for the Jets.
It's a fresh slate to a certain extent. It's
yeah.
They've cleaned up a lot of the shit that Joe inherited, and so we'll see what they do. Up to them.
AJ, thanks for being on. Everybody, thank you so much for watching Marketing for Now. Love you, bro. I'll talk to you later. Thank you for watching this episode. Andrea, take us home.
That was so epic. I love that. Thanks for letting us get a little view in on you. Got a smart little brother.
Indeed.
All right. Thanks, Gary. Thanks everybody for joining us. Next up in July, we've got two shows. We've got one on July 6th, Marketing for the Now APAC from 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Gary, where are you going to be for that one?
Probably home. I'm excited for that. Okay, when is it?
It's July on 6th. July 6th. So just after that July 4th weekend. Mm-hmm. And then we've got another one on July 22nd from noon to 1. So come check us out. Continue. Let's continue the dialogue on hashtag marketing for the now. And check us out on our past recordings on MFTN, marketing for the now, VaynerX.com. And we'd love to hear from you. Thanks, everybody.
As we end today's podcast, I want to give a huge shout out to the people. You know, it's so funny. People that leave reviews and written reviews of this podcast on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms just mean the world to me. You've taken an extra 13 to 95 seconds to show love and also give context to people of why this is a worthwhile podcast. So I appreciate that so much. And even more fun, because I think we all love a little cosign or a shout out or a little awareness, I'm gonna have the team give a couple of shout outs daily on our favorite reviews. So take it away. Which were our favorites this week?
Thanks so much, Gary. Today's amazing 5-star review reads, "Gary, been listening to you every day has definitely sparked something in me. Every day now, I've been finding ways to be more of a creative, ways to study the target audience, ways to communicate with others, and the ability to not care what others think of me. This has opened my eyes and is definitely a start of a new beginning. Thanks, Gary." No, thank you for that amazing review. And to anybody else listening out there, if you leave us a review, you might just get shouted out in the next episode.